You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Coming to us from Te Ika a Māui, one from Te Papa I Oia and one from Puneke, Wellington. They've just put out a collaborative EP called Joint Effort, and they are both legends in their respective regional scenes and, I guess, in the national electronic scene here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. We have Andwan and Synthetic Children here joining us to talk about their new collaborative EP called Joint Effort. Good morning to you both. How are we feeling?
Morena. Doing good, thanks.
Yeah, morena. Same. I'm feeling very good today. Had two coffees and yeah, living the dream.
Nice. You two were both on BFM about maybe half an hour ago. Do you still have a lot of interview energy left?
All day. I could, yeah.
Same. Mm-hmm. All day, you know.
It's infinite reserve.
Yeah, we just love talking about our music, so, you know, musicians.
Well, awesome. Well, I'm very keen to talk about some of this music very shortly, but before we do that, I would like to comment on the collaborative nature of electronic music, because it seems like with electronic music, you know, there's always back-to-back sets, there's so many collaborative albums that come out. There's more DJs that are booked on singular nights than there are bands when we're talking about DJ night versus rock nights, I guess you could say. Is electronic music more apt for a high rate of collaboration than most other forms of music?
I don't necessarily think that it's... I think in a band, you have a lot of collaboration. So I think in the live sense... There's as much collaboration going on, you know, depending on who's involved. But I do think that electronic music's advantage in this space, especially when it comes to like the way we worked on this EP, is that it's a lot easier and more affordable to record yourself on electronic equipment in your room, like. You know, the classic bedroom producer situation. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more accessible than recording a band in a studio. Costs a ton of money. Mm-hmm. And I think in that sense, it opens up the door for more collaborations from a financial or practical perspective. Like also a lot of electronic music can be made in headphones or like at a lower volume on monitors. At least in some of the writing stages, whereas bands, like, you know, there's a shortage of places people can make loud music together. But I don't think it's inherent to the thing. I think it's just in the sort of social...
The economic sort of framework. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think, Andy?
Well, I think from the very beginning, even like when you're just starting to make beats and you might not be working with other people, I think electronic music, I think in a sense we're like, because I think I've developed a lot as a producer, and I'm always more producer focused than as a DJ, but I think becoming like a music collector, like I think to really thrive in electronic and really understand the genre and like grow as an artist and like integrate into the community well, like you need to be focusing like a lot more. And I'd say this with like any genre of music, like any, like whether you're making folk or like whatever, like you have to be focusing on like what's going on. But I think the sort of DJ producer sort of like synthesis really kind of like incentivizes you to like support other people's music and listen to it, you know, because like not many people do 100% original sets. Like it's a sort of every now and then thing that producers might do. But I think for the most part, like, so I think even that at the beginning, that like, kind of feeds into like, being attentive to what other people are doing. And I think but yeah, I agree. I just sort of echo what C said, you know, like it's very, you know, it's a lot more cost effective just to make electronic music, you know, and like, you know, you might kind of buy a plugin every now and then to kind of, yeah. And I think it like allows more room to to work with other people. But I think it depends though. Like I think at the end of the day, like you do sort of, we've only got so much time on our hands to make our own music, you know, so like I think at the end of the day, like people are always kind of careful about who they collaborate with and all that kind of stuff, but yeah, like it's definitely like a lot more feasible just to be like, oh hey, let's send some stems, you know, let's work on some beats, you know, and then yeah. and you can do that remotely. We can just come over to each other's places, you know, and yeah.
Well, speaking of feasibility, Selena, I saw that you went on a tour with Diesel Jenny recently, and I watched the video that you two put out, and it's hilarious watching you both play on the Inter-Islander with no one watching you. How does it feel to be in that situation? Is it quite alienating?
I'm glad you watched it. It's a crack-up video on Diesel Jenny's YouTube channel. The whole tour itself was like phenomenal, and we had like some outstanding turnouts, and we got this amazing crowd at the Crown down in Otapoti. And then, yeah, we get on the ferry, and it's just like a scene out of an apocalypse film. Like, there was like three geezers watching the rugby that we were playing in front of on the screen. A couple of kids sort of walked past and stared at us for a bit. But it was very funny taking the handy cam and filming Diesel Jenny from across the other side of the lounge. And it's just empty. Actually, there was a guy while I was playing. I was like on the floor because I didn't have my keyboard stand with me. So I'm like playing on the floor of the stage on the Inter-Islander, and this guy walked over my gear and plugged his laptop into my multi-box.
What?
It was so funny, but, you know, God bless the Inter-Islander for that free trip. It made the tour affordable.
Mm-hmm. Shout out Inter-Islander, man. Now, Andy, I saw on Instagram you've been very vocal about moving your music off of Spotify and moving away from DistroKid. New Zealand On Air, bless their soul. We love them here at The One. But if you look at their criteria when they're looking at single funding, they do have a look at Spotify numbers when they're considering who to give money to. How do we move our music industry off of Spotify to stop supporting its CEO, who's making terrifying AI death robots?
I think this obsession with like just mere numbers is just so dumb, honestly. And I just think it's dumb. And like, you see all these, like, I don't think there's anything to celebrate when people are like, I think where we're starting as artists, I think we just need to kind of just do only what we want to do. Like, I don't really understand this whole kind of thing where, like, and it isn't just, like, Spotify. Like, people are always like, I got on this playlist, or I got up to, like, X amount of monthly listens and all that kind of thing. And it's just sort of, it's like, well, it's, like, meaningless because, like, you're getting underpaid. Like, you're getting paid, like, 0.0002 cents a stream. You know, and I just think it's kind of, I don't want to sound judgmental, but I do kind of feel a way about seeing people who are very well aware and who actually, because that's the thing, like, I wasn't making any money for Spotify or for myself because I've always been a under 1,000 listens kind of guy. But like, you see all these like big underground names, you're like, they keep going, oh yeah, cool, like I've got more and more stuff on Spotify. And it's like, well, I think we just need to boycott major streaming for a bit, to be honest. I think we just got to go Bandcamp, SoundCloud for a bit, like Nina Protocol, to be honest. And I think we just need to accept it's like, I don't think it's even really serving us, because it's like, and people do this kind of thing where like they're orienting their content more towards like short form content of like, you make like all these reels with like the same 10 seconds of your song. And I think that's sort of, yeah, this kind of streaming like thing, it's kind of moving in the opposite direction about less is more. And I think I would rather like less people like put more time into listening to my whole EP. Like, I think it's way more fulfilling for like someone, for like a handful of people to like listen to your EP and go, wow, that was really, really cool, rather than more people like just like listen to like what, like 30 seconds of your song on a reel and being like, oh, like, cool, you know, like
it's quality over quantity is the
method. And I think it's just, and I think we just need to realize as artists, it's like Spotify needs us more than we need Spotify. Like, there's always going to be another way of like sharing your music, whether it's with like 5 people or 100 people or whatever, you know. And I think at the end of the day, and I think we need to take ownership of that. Whether we're like a small artist or a real big artist, I think the big artists need to be held accountable though, because they're the ones like who are actually like generating revenue, like more revenue, I would say, for Spotify. And I think they And, but that's the thing, though. Like, the bigger the artist, like, the less they seem to do politically. Like,
it's the unfortunate it's relationship of being in that position. You're either more constrained or you're more afraid to speak out about things.
Yeah, and but then it's like, what's it worth? Like, you know, like, you're famous, but then you're being, like, suffocated.
Yeah.
You know, your voice is being suffocated. Like, you're not able to say anything. It's like, well, like, what was all that for? It's like, art is, like, this spiritual, emotional, kind of political thing, which I really believe it is, especially underground music. Like, underground music came and, like, continues to, like, develop from marginalized communities. It's like, well, you know, it's just kind of betrayal to sort of keep, you know, supporting these platforms. And Daniel Ek, he's not a musician.
No.
He doesn't get it. Like, he's just like a billionaire asshole. Sorry.
No, fair enough.
I
want to talk about the kind of regional differences between Tamaki and Papa'i Oia. Earlier this year, I had the pleasure of discovering and listening to Real Rungle Records Volume 1, which showcases some great Te Papa'i Oia artists like Show Pony and Diesel Jenny and more. It's very bombastic, and it's very different to what I've heard come out from Tamaki. What do you think is the overlap between these two scenes?
Overlap? Oh, I guess this EP is an overlap.
Yep.
But I think, like, Te Papa'i Oia is, like, the rungle in the Real Rungle Records, that word, I guess, to us here in Palmy is, like, something that comes out of our unique scene and situation where anyone can play a gig, and the people turning up to those gigs, like, it could be 10 people or it could be 50, you know, but it's never determined by, like, the continuation of gigs here is not determined by alcohol sales or, you know, like, a promoter needing hundreds and hundreds of people to come through every single night. Like, we can have a gig every, like, one or two, like, once every week or maybe once every month at some points in the year, and we're able to do that, and we're very fortunate, but it means that, like, you know, yeah, anyone can do it, and any kind of music is enjoyed and accepted and loved, whereas what I sort of have observed as an outsider to Tamaki Makoto is that there are some amazing creatives up there, and there are some amazing people doing amazing work. But more and more, places like Karangahape Road are sort of getting sucked into a situation where not everyone can play a gig. Like, you know, if you can't sell out the space, or if you can't bring a crowd that'll drink a ton of beers, like, that venue don't want you. And I think that creates a environment that only certain kinds of, like, accepted or, like, popular trendy music is going to come through your scene, and your scene isn't really cultivating empowering space. Yeah, it's not organic.
No more rat
race. Also not it's not empowering to like young creatives or marginalized creatives. You know, there are groups doing cool stuff, you know, like Audio Foundation, and kind of, you know, there are always going to be places doing real cool stuff up there. It's a city of 2 million people, but, you know, I think there is a lot to criticize about the way bookings work, sort of monetarily versus taking risks.
Would you agree with that, Andy?
Oh, hard out. I don't. Yeah, like, it just kind of goes back to that question you asked me before about the sort of just like we all just turn into these like big or little numbers to these people, and it's like, mate, like, it's like, I feel like my appeal and like a lot of other people's appeal as underground artists in the scene, when someone is like putting on a show or like booking people, it's like, like, I might not have, like, thousands and thousands of followers, or I might not be this big influencer guy making all these reels, but the thing is, like, for that same reason, like, I've got all these deep cuts, I've got these dub plates, not just from me, but from my mates, you know, and it's like, I feel like some promoters are just focusing on the wrong thing, you know? They just see, like, Because I think as well, like, because, like, all this internet stuff is so actually detached from reality, and it's just, like, the image of, like, you know, again, it's just, like, a small little soundbite and all that kind of thing. It doesn't actually really necessarily translate in real life to, like, what a good gig would be. And, like, it's kind of funny that, like, you see these people, like, they'll book all these people that are big names and stuff, but they have nothing in common, you know, and, like, there's no sort of... And you can really tell that about the energy of a night sometimes, where, like, you just, like, whacked all these, like, names in a lineup. And because there's no sort of, like, community kind of in common, you know, it's just, like, kind of, like, a weirder vibe. And, like, I mean, it's still fun. Like, it's still, like, a night out and, like, you know, people have, like, a boogie and stuff. But, like, I think, yeah, I think community building is, like, a really important thing that I think when people focus on that is really quite important.
Mm.
Like, whether you're, you know, and I think, yeah, I think maybe I focus more on just sort of like lower budget kind of stuff, so people can actually just seek out people with a really interesting sound, you know, and putting that together, or like, or even like collectivizing promotion, you know, like if, like making a, like, you know, kind of like splitting the cost between like multiple people, so then it's even more grassroots, and then you can take quote unquote more risks with who you book, kind of thing. I think that's really important, but yeah, no, like, I think there's, and that's something I really admire when I see, like, a lot of what's happening in, like, Wellington. Like, there's definitely, like, collectors up here who are doing really cool things in Auckland, but, like, I do seem to see it a bit more in, like, other cities, aside from Auckland, because, like, hey, I love Auckland, but, like, yeah, there's a bit of a rat race kind of vibe to it, and it's, like,
A little bit seeps.
Yeah, it's just... Well, like, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to be repeating myself from, like, the last question, you know?
Well,
and it's one of those things of, like, bro, don't get me started.
easy as. Given that this thing seems to be the first love child between the Tamaki and Te Papa Iwaia regional electronic sounds, I want to know, what have you combined from each other's style that makes this project a joint effort? And how do you navigate that process and that space?
I think you go. Yeah.
I think, like, the kind of influences on the sound, like, you know, genre wise, Andy and I have a lot of similarities in that sense. But I think it was more about the difference in, like, creative process that I create on, like, a hardware drum machine synthesizer setup, and Andy primarily creates in a DAW. I think the way we worked bouncing stems back and forth, it meant that we were, this is a phrase Andy used just before in a different interview, but, like, I really liked it, but, like, it allowed us both to lock in on, like, fine-tuning our unique creative process, but using each other's, ideas.
Mm.
So, like, Andy would send me an idea, and then I would sort of spin it through my processes and the way I make music. And so I think that was a really cool way of creating something new.
And
yeah, hard. Yeah, I think we both have, like, quite an interesting take. Like, I think, like, we have, like, yeah, the, like, this is, the, like, I think there's, like, a lot of commonality in our kind of approaches in terms of, like, kind of atmosphere and, like, sort of, like, moving a bit kind of adjacently to sort of, like, I guess more traditional, like, grime or dubstep or breakbeat. But I think there's, like, a lot of, like, differences in that as well, and I think that are quite complementary. And I think we both kind of came at it where we're like, oh yeah, well, we both quite liked our approaches in that kind of sense, you know, with, like, our sort of sound choices. But yeah, like, I think just, like, yeah, our different kind of workflows and then how that kind of comes together, you know, we're like, you know, you can't get the best of both worlds. You get kind of, like, hardware processing, all that kind of stuff. And then you get kind of, like DAW processing, and, like, digital synthesis, you know, and, but yeah, and, yeah, no, like, yeah, basically what C said, like, it's, you know, that was kind of the thing. And I think, like, also, I think working remotely, like, we weren't quite, at the beginning, like, I think we said this before in, like, an early interview, but, like, we were both like, oh, what would it even be like to work remotely when you can't have, like, instant feedback if you're catching up together in real life, you know, at one of each other's studios. But then I think the remoteness actually kind of really helped us, because, like, we were able to fully lock in our own space and then send it over when we were ready, you know? So we were able to, like, give, like, the fullest amount of our kind of individual processes, and then, like, we'd send it over, and then they're, like, the other person could, like, adjust that and then send it back. And I think that's really kind of maximized, like, how...
Be proactive rather than reactive, it seems.
Yeah, yeah. And I think allowing that space through the remote work, I think it's really allowed us to have, like, a really 50-50% blend of both of our styles across all three of the tracks. And I think that's, like, a really remarkable thing, you know? And I think what was real remarkable was, like, which is something that C has said as well, is that, like, each time we'd get something back, we're like, oh, that was exactly what I wanted, you know? Like, there actually wasn't too much in the way of, like, friction or anything like that. It was a very seamless kind of process, and I think that was quite amazing, you know, quite special.
Yeah, hell yeah. Well, I'm very excited to play the track Joint Effort off this new Joint Effort EP. Thank you both for coming on the show this morning and having a chat about the new EP. Do you have any final quick words for our lovely listeners out there?
Thanks for having us on, and hope everyone enjoys, but just make some music with your mates, like, and release it, and don't worry about doing it properly, and send it to Radio Control here in Palmy. We'll play it 100%.
Awesome. And you, Andy?
I reckon, like, yeah, thank you for your time today, Zach. Really appreciate the interview. And I think, yeah, just support your mates. Don't be afraid just to be yourself, and just to, like, focus on, like, exactly what you and your mates are curious about. Support people on Bandcamp, or just, like, you'd even be, like, serving people better by, like, getting their dub plates on your USB and, like, playing it out rather than streaming it on Spotify, to be honest. Like, and I think, yeah, just support the underground, and, like, support artists on their terms rather than, like, artificial terms dictated by billionaires.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't need to be that way.
We have enough of those goddamn guys in our life as it is. We don't need them infiltrating our art as well.
Exactly. Yeah. they've been taking too much from us already.
They have. And I think on that, we'll leave it there. Thank you both for coming on. Ma te wa. Take care.
Thank you.
Kia ora. All right, folks, that was Andwan and Synthetic Children. Andy and Selena, we're talking to both of them about their latest EP, Joint Effort, which is out now. Coming up at 10, we do have a corridor with Minnie Roberts about her latest track, Godwits, which I'm very much looking forward to. Here is Joint Effort from Andwan and Synthetic Children. You're listening to The One. Keep it locked.
Was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcasts.